program and support for KTOO is brought to you in part by Our Town, a weekly product for Junoites from the Juno Empire. More information is available at 586-3470.
The next Culture Days at the Library is Thursday, April 25th at 6:30 at the Downtown Library. Ishmael Hope will share the experience of slowly learning the ways of his ancestors and his appreciations for their mastery as storytellers, orators, and artists. We will imitate our grandparents. Hear of Ishmael's joyous apprenticeship in becoming an indigenous storyteller. Sponsored by the Friends of the Juneau Public Libraries, the Chilkoot Indian Tribal Government, and the Haynesboro Public Library, with a grant from the Institute of Museum and Library Services.
It's Thursday, April 18th, and you're listening to KTOO FM. It's just about 3 o'clock. I'm your host for Juno Afternoon today, Danny. Today we'll learn about this weekend's Alaska State Improv Festival. We'll talk to Alex Brown and Megan Stanglant about this Friday's Tidal Echoes launch party at UAS. We'll learn about this Saturday's Women's Healing Arts event, and Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up, that Writer's Almanac, music, and more. So stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Environmental and Native American groups have filed a federal lawsuit to block a proposed mine in central Nevada. Willie Albright reports from Reno.
Great Basin Resource Watch and the Western Shoshone Defense Project are suing the Bureau of Land Management over its approval of a huge open-pit molybdenum mine near the town of Eureka. Critics say the Mount Hope project, as it's known, will have immediate, irreparable, and permanent impacts to the project area. They say the BLM violated several laws in approving the project. John Hatter is director of Great Basin Resource Watch. He says the project will destroy large areas of mature pinyon pines, and that is a problem for the Western Shoshone.
They're concerned that any of these large mines will impact their areas. There are some cultural sites, and they're definitely concerned about the loss of another pine netting area.
Pinyon pine trees take decades before they are mature enough to produce pine nuts, and pine nuts are an important cultural and economic resource for the Western Shoshone. The BLM declined to comment on the lawsuit, but project officials say the BLM conducted an exhaustive 6-year review before approving the mine. For National Native News, I'm Willie Albright in Reno, Nevada.
Traveling one-day self-defense courses are scheduled for 20 reservations across the United States and Canada. Patty Stein is founder of Arming Sisters.
I want them to take away the empowerment, bring about self-love again, and the ownership of their bodies.
Stein's group is offering the classes at no charge. She says measures need to be taken to address the high rates of abuse among Native women.
Every Indigenous woman I know has been a victim of either physical assault, sexual assault, domestic violence, rape, including myself. It's gotten out of hand. When I can't look around a room of Indigenous women and not have one single woman not have been a victim of anything, it's sad.
Stein will instruct the classes, which she says are to boost pride in Native women. She hopes they will also help women protect themselves. Classes are planned for this summer. More information can be found online at armingsisters.com. The Indian Health Service says President Obama's proposed 2014 budget includes a nearly 3% increase. The IHS budget request is $4.4 billion. According to the agency, that's a more than $100 million increase from last year. The increase would help purchase health care from private sectors through contract health. It would also support staffing and operating costs. Funding would support ongoing construction at least 2 reservations, including the Navajo and San Carlos Apache. If the proposal is enacted, it would be a more than 30% increase seen by the IHS in recent years. The budget can be found online at ihs.gov. The health agency serves more than 2 million American Indians and Alaska Natives across the country. Services are planned for a Native American museum curator. George Paul Horse Capture Sr. passed away this week in Montana after health complications. He's said to be the first Native American curator in the U.S. Horse Capture Sr. held the position of curator at Wyoming's Plains Indian Museum at the Buffalo Bill Historical Center. During his time there in 1979, he organized exhibits on Wounded Knee and held seminars on Plains Indians. He later worked at the National Museum of the American Indian. Horse Capture Sr. was also involved in books, film, and television work. Services are planned for Friday and Saturday in Montana. The Grovant Man was 75 years old at the time of his death. During this week in 2010, the government of New Zealand announced its support of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. The country's Minister of Maori Affairs made the announcement at the UN in New York. New Zealand, the U.S., Canada, and Australia first opposed the declaration when it was adopted by the General Assembly in 2007. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, with funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're in tune with KTOO. It's a Juneau afternoon, and I'm here with my first guests. They're from the Alaska State Improv Festival. We have Eric Caldwell, the producer of the festival, and Andy, Drew, and Louis.
Louise.
Yeah. Sorry.
All right.
So tell us a little bit about this event and about your organization. What's going on this week?
The Alaska State Improv Festival is being held by Morally Impoverished Incorporated. We're a local improv group that's been performing since 2004 here in Juneau. We've brought in ensembles from 8 communities, 12 ensembles in total. They'll be performing here locally at McPheeters Hall Thursday, which is, of course, tonight, Friday, and Saturday at 7 o'clock and 9 o'clock.
And are you guys, Eric, Andy, Drew, and Louise, I know you're all part of improv groups yourselves.
Yeah.
Are you leading the workshops also?
Yes. Drew and I will actually be teaching our workshop on Saturday morning, actually, 10 to 12.
And what's your workshop going to be about?
It's called The How and the Why. And basically, in improv, you have the who, the what, the where. Like, who are the characters? What's going on? Where are you? And most people know those things. We think the most important thing in improv is the how and the why. How are the characters reacting? Why are they reacting that way? And if you know that, then I think you have gold.
Yeah, a lot of that is mostly based out of our style that we play. Drew and I do a two-man group, so...
And what is your group called?
Our group is called Ranger Danger and the
Danger Ranger.
That's catchy. Stereophonic. Andy, how about you? Are you doing a workshop as well?
I am. I'm doing a workshop on solo improvisation tomorrow. Improv is this ensemble art, and so, of course, I've created a workshop on performing alone. And so I'll work with performers on how to take a suggestion and just create characters themselves. And so the nice thing is you come up against your own weaknesses because you're faced with them on stage.
Ah, that sounds like a good workshop to face a challenging problem for performers. What groups are you part of?
I'll be performing with a group called Sybil, which is just me. And in my other group that I'm performing with, I'm doing double duty. I'm also performing with my partner, John Luce, in a group called Pink Pony, also a two-man group.
How do you perform by yourself if you're in a one-man group? I mean, don't you have to have someone?
It came about when I had a two-person group that my partner couldn't make it for some reason, and so I was stuck on stage alone, and then I started developing things. I always teach my students, do whatever makes you look good on stage, and that's what I do, is I just do the things that I do really well and try to avoid the things that I don't do so well on stage. And I get to play multiple characters, the kind of characters I want, which is mostly old women and children, and just riff on the ideas from the audience and play with the audience as well. You start to find that the audience is another character, and you can really gain a lot of energy, and they become part of your miniature ensemble on stage.
Will there be a lot of audience interaction with the actual shows as well?
I think a lot of the groups will use a little bit of audience interaction in lesser or greater extent.
And the workshops, so they're different than the shows. They're happening
there are three
Saturday
workshops. Uh-huh. Andy's doing a 6-hour solo improv intensive from 10:30 to 5:30 with 1-hour lunch, and that's going to be just on solo improvisation. It's also great for actors who are looking to build their skills in character building, not solely for people who are interested in improvisation. The How and the Why is from 10:30 to 12:30 on Saturday, and then we have another workshop being led by Roy Yannick out of Austin, Texas, the Hideout Theater, who's leading a workshop on an introduction to improvised plays. Details about all of those workshops and also registering for those are online at asifest.com.
ASIFest.com, and you can get your tickets there, right?
You can get your tickets there, as well as at Hearthside Books, The Jack, and At the Door.
And where are all these events taking place?
Everything's taking place at McPheeters Hall, and for the people who are coming out for the festival, we have a $50 all-session pass that gets you into all 6 shows, which is a very nice savings over $15 per ticket.
Could you tell me a little bit more about the groups that are coming in for these? Is it just Alaska or?
Oh, no. The people that we have in the studio right now, Andy's come in from Chicago, where he works at the Second City as the head of the writing program. We also have Drew and Luis, who are here from Los Angeles, where they perform at IO West Comedy Sports Los Angeles, and they also do training at Universal Studios.
Drew does.
That's true.
I don't work there anymore.
He got fired.
Are either of you Spider-Man on your days off?
No, but one of my good friends is Wolverine, and so he basically just takes off his backwards hat, puts on sideburns and claws, and goes out to talk to the park
as Wolverine.
Yeah,
that's very interesting. Yeah. What kind of improv training do you have to do? I mean, who do you train?
It's a lot of actual other improvisers who are looking to change their skills a little bit to learn how to play faster, and also just actors who are looking to be a tour guide. A lot of times we have to train them in improv, how to think on your feet without getting stuck like I just did.
Drew and I usually teach together when we do our workshops together, because he has more of a long-form improv background, whereas mine comes more from short-form improv. So short-form is more like, whose line is it anyway, stuff like that.
Right.
So we're coming from two completely different points of view. So together it kind of creates this really great
idea
that we can teach to everybody else.
Yeah.
And you had asked about the ensembles that are performing. We have a very wide variety from Andy's show, Sybil, which is a one-man show, multiple characters, to The Cat Pack, which is a musical variety show that's here from Unexpected Productions in Seattle. We have people doing improvised plays. We have artists that have just very different approaches to the work that they do, like Squirrel Buddies from Austin, Texas. They are taking the concept of bringing the most positivity they can, no matter how awkward the situation. So you get that juxtaposition, and that juxtaposition in itself creates humor. We do have descriptions of all of the groups, as well as an overall schedule and video links for each ensemble that's performing, and that is also on the website at asifest.com.
There's about 3 improv groups just from Juneau.
Mm-hmm.
Is part of the reason that this kind of event is going on is because this is a town where it's particularly people are very passionate about improvising, or do you think?
The people who are doing improv are definitely passionate about it, and we're looking to expand that passion to other members of the community as well. Not Safe for Improv comes to us from the University of Alaska Southeast and the performance group of their improv club. Morally Improvished, as I mentioned at the top of the interview, has been performing since 2004. We're doing a piece this time around called An Improbable Act, where we take a locally written script, do a cold reading of the first page, and then improvise the rest as a one-act play. We also have a two-man group called Rorschach Pattern 9 that is a little on the, I don't even know how quite to say it, but the tagline is that they make sense out of nonsense and occasionally vice versa.
Sounds like a whimsical group of people. Sure to be very entertaining. Is it appropriate for all audiences, these performances?
The shows are open to all audiences. However, because the content is improvised, we don't necessarily guarantee that there will not be adult subject matter.
Okay, that's good for people to know. Well, thank you very much, Eric, and all the improv workshop leaders that have sat in here today. You can get the tickets for the fest at asifest.com or pick up advance tickets at Hearthside Books or the Juno Arts and Culture Center. It's April 18th, 19th, and 20th at 7 p.m. and 9 p.m., and there's also workshops on Friday from 10:30 to 5:30 p.m. and one on Saturday, too, right?
Correct, and all of those are happening at McFeeters Hall.
All right, well, stop on by if you want to see some funny, funny stuff, and thank you all for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Guests are Alex Brown and Megan Stangeland, and they're here for the Tidal Echoes launch that's happening tomorrow at the Egan Lecture Hall at 7 p.m. Hi, Alex and Megan.
Hi.
Thanks for joining me. What can people expect to see at this year's? Well, first of all, what is Tidal Echoes, in case people don't know?
Tidal Echoes is the University of Alaska Southeast published literary and arts journal, and what's really unique about the journal is that although we produce it here in Juneau, it features voices from writers and artists all over Southeast Alaska.
Oh, is being from Southeast Alaska the only requirement for submitting into the journal?
Yes. Yep. As long as you're from the Southeast and have been living here for at least a couple of years, it doesn't matter if you were born and raised and you submit work, it'll definitely be considered.
And we do keep about 25% of the journal is reserved for students of University of Alaska. So that's a big part of it as well.
Oh, okay. Do you get a lot of submissions every year?
This year we had over 300 submissions. I think it's greater than the last two or three years.
Yes, it goes up every year. We seem to get more and more, and the more stuff we get, the better stuff we get. And, you know, keeps the quality of the journal fantastic.
And how did the two of you get involved in the journal, and what do you do for the journal? Are you both editors?
Yeah, so I'm the senior editor, and then Megan here is the junior editor, and we choose a new editor to bring in every year, and it's a two-year internship. Both of us are creative writing students, and part of the degree requirement is to have an internship, so we were presented the opportunity, both of us applied, and I started my internship last year, and then I was doing what Megan is doing now, and then she'll take over my job since this is my last year at UAS. So,
how big of a staff is it? Is it like a workroom environment?
It's three people. It's Alex and I, and then our faculty advisor, Emily Wall. And we do have an editorial board, and they help us make the submissions. They help us look over the submissions and then choose which pieces strengthen the journal.
How are pieces selected for Title Echoes?
Well, we go through the submissions, and that's where the editorial board comes into play. They read through, you know, all of these submissions as well as we do, and then, you know, each piece is scored. And we only have room for, I think it's 129 pages worth of stuff, whereas this year we had over 400 pages, close to around there, of material, and that's not including artwork. So it has to go down from, you know, 300 to 400 pages down to 129. So we have a pretty strict process of, you know, bringing that amount down.
And like Alex said, 25% of the journal is reserved for UAS students, but we have voices from all over Southeast.
Do you have, when you collaborate with the advisory board, is that staff members of UAS, like faculty?
There's some faculty, but there are a couple of community members as well as students from UAS, so as well as other staff members from other Southeast Alaska or UAS locations. Yeah.
Do you all meet in a room or something like that, or do you like exchange correspondence online or something?
No, we actually do all meet in a room. Once we've kind of pared it down, we look at the pieces, and that's the most exciting part of the collaboration on the journal, because everybody is vouching for certain pieces that mean a lot to them. And so it's kind of our duke it out moment where we decide what pieces go in, and people argue very strongly for the pieces that they think should be included in the journal. So it's an exciting process.
Also, sort of the more controversial pieces get discussed during this board meeting. So, for example, this year we had a couple of pieces submitted by some of the, the Lemon Creek Correctional Facility.
The prison.
Yeah, prison inmates. And they had submitted, I think there was about
four to six pieces,
yeah,
by four individuals.
And, we decided we really wanted to publish these pieces, and, three of them, I think, were published in this edition. So, you know, we all kind of came together on that decision.
Oh, that's very interesting. And you are a creative writing major, Alex. Are you also a creative writing major, Megan?
I am as well, yeah.
What kind of writing do you do?
I focus more on prose. Prose is my strong point. Alex is more poetry, though.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, for my entire career at UAS, I've been more into poetry. Actually, majority of my life I've been into poetry, but I've been kind of drifting, I noticed, lately. I've been writing more sort of the creative essays and whatnot, just trying different things. I don't know, seeing what I like.
Who's going to be at the reading tonight? Or could you describe a little bit about the event tonight?
Well, let's see. We have...
Tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night. 7. Don't forget. We have reading, outside of Richard Dauenhauer, the featured writer, as well as Jeremy Kane will be speaking, the featured artist. We have Jonas Lamb, Heather Laverne, Nathan Block, Jackie Boucher, and Nora Dauenhauer are also reading their stuff. So should be pretty good lineup. I know Jackie Boucher is pretty into the poetry slam. I know she's won it a couple times. She's really great at spoken word, and I'm excited to hear the others as well. Nora Dauenhauer is the Alaska State Writer Laureate, I think is
the
title.
Writer Laureate, she is a poet.
So it's pretty exciting to have her presence there as well.
Are there going to be any students other than Jackie? Do you have more students lined up?
Heather is a student, and actually Jackie is alumni.
Oh.
Yeah, she graduated.
Jonas is actually UAS faculty, Jonas Lamb.
Oh, okay. Do faculty often submit to the journal as well?
We had a couple faculty members submit this year. I'm not sure about last year, if Alex could speak to that.
Usually, it's probably not as many as students, but we do get a handful from not only artwork, but as well as writing. So,
do you find that the journals ever take on a general theme, like by coincidence? They're kind of random, right? But do they just by? Is there some overarching theme that you've noticed in the pieces, or does a theme come out by accident in the selection process?
It's kind of an interesting process. When Alex and I sat down to actually do what we call creating the book, that is taking all the submissions and I'm trying to put them in an order that makes sense and a cohesion. We actually started to pull out themes we hadn't before recognized when we started placing different pieces together. And there was kind of a theme or multiple themes that ended up emerging. And I think it made the journal really strong, the way they all kind of fell into piece. And certain pieces played off and worked really well with others.
Sounds kind of like making a mix CD or something like that for a friend.
Well, another really cool part was that, the first piece of the journal has to do with fire, and then Richard Dauenhauer's pieces are very sensual. He's got his erotic epigrams as well as a couple of other pieces that are very sensual, and then we kind of tied that into the fire, and then Jeremy Cain's piece of the cover has flames on it, so it's got these sort of, decal flames coming on. So I think that there is, a lot of that's sort of an overarching theme that I think we kind of tie together, but there are also other themes in the book, ranging from youth to food, oriented to, it's broad, but at the same time, everything comes together.
Are there a lot of pieces that are derived from classes? You mentioned food, and I hear there was a creative food writing class or something.
Yeah, there were.
Do you see that when you're putting it together?
Well, the funny thing was that the food pieces, there was maybe one piece that was from the food writing class, but then there were a couple that weren't. I think there was a piece from Sitka that was, I think it was Hope Renewal and Herring.
Search of Grandfather Clam,
yeah, which, were food-oriented but did not come from that class. So it's kind of funny how that plays out.
We did have a whole series of how-to poems, which were fascinating because they were all based on the same concept or exercise, which I believe Emily Wall, our faculty advisor, presented in one of her classes. But they all turned out so different that if you had taken out the how-to title, they would have stood alone on their own really well. And so a couple of those are actually included in the journal.
Interesting. What should people do if they want to write a piece and they want to submit it? What tips do you have for creative writing, creative writers out there that want to submit?
I would say stick away from vague themes and descriptions. I think a lot of, we get a lot of sort of those love poems, where they're sort of more talking about this idea that, you need to use words and descriptions and everyday things to help, create an image. And that's a lot of the times, the stuff that doesn't make it in is, I don't think they bring enough detail into it. The more personable a piece is, the more people are going to be able to relate to it. So I think that that's important, is to use details, use things from, the smallest details that you possibly can.
Being from Southeast Alaska, we have the wonderful opportunity to be surrounded by natural inspiration. We do receive a lot of pretty whale poetry, which is maybe great to share with your friends, but poetry, especially here in Southeast Alaska, you have to bring something unique, some voice from the community or your community that really speaks beyond the beauty.
Will either of you be speaking tomorrow night as well?
We both will. We're mostly going to just be talking about the experience of working as editors for the journal, as well as introducing the artists that are up and coming, that are going to be speaking that night.
Yeah, we'll talk about the process and what it meant for us to be able to present the journal.
Well, I wish you luck, and thank you so much for coming in today, Alex and Megan, and go to the Tidal Echo launch tomorrow at 7 p.m. at the Egan Lecture Hall. It's totally free of charge, right?
Correct. And there will be cookies and coffee. So.
And there's cookies and coffee.
And journals for sale for, $5.
You can eat a cookie and write a song about it, or a poem. Well, thank you very much, and good luck.
High time, high time, and I'm stranded on the phone. The Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 18th of April, 2013. The anniversary of the great historic event celebrated by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow in the poem that begins, "Listen, my children, and you shall hear of the midnight ride of Paul Revere on the 18th of April in 75. Hardly a man is now alive who remembers that famous day and year, or who in fact remembers that poem by Longfellow. But it was on this day in 1775. Paul Revere rode from Boston out to Lexington and then to Concord, warning that the British were coming. And it's the anniversary of one of the worst natural disasters in this country's history, the San Francisco earthquake of 1906, which began at 5:12 in the morning on a Wednesday. The shaking lasted just over a minute, the main shock about 42 seconds long. Along the San Andreas Fault, running the length of California, the epicenter 2 miles off the coast of San Francisco. The earthquake believed to have been about a 7.8 on the modern Richter scale. San Francisco was a city of 410,000 people at the time, and the earthquake and the fires that followed left about 2 out of 3 San Franciscans homeless. The earthquake caused some damage. The fires that followed caused even more. Fires caused by ruptured gas lines, and then fires set by firefighters, thinking they could blow up buildings with dynamite and thereby create fire breaks, which did not work. It was later estimated that half of the buildings blown up by dynamite would have otherwise survived. And then there were the buildings set afire by the owners, hoping to collect insurance money. Because insurance did not cover earthquake damage, it did, however, cover fire damage. But the disaster caused so much damage that insurance companies couldn't cover it anyway, so people didn't get their money. Historians now estimate that 90% of the destruction to the city came from fires that followed the earthquake rather than the earthquake itself. About 500 persons were shot and killed by federal troops and police trying to prevent looting, many of whom were not actually looting, it turned out, simply trying to rescue their own possessions from the fires. After the earthquake, San Francisco set out to rebuild itself in time for the great Panama Pacific International Exposition, scheduled for 1915. And in the rush to rebuild, they took shortcuts, ignored many of the building codes and regulations, and buildings built in the years after the earthquake were actually less seismically safe than those built before. Here's a poem for today by James Fenton, entitled Sirius. Awake, alert, suddenly serious in love. You're a surprise. I've known you long enough, now I can hardly meet your eyes. It's not that I'm embarrassed or ashamed. You've changed the rules the way I'd hoped they'd change before I thought hopes are for fools. Let me walk with you. I've got the newspapers to fetch. I think you know. I think you have the edge. But I feel cheerful, even so. That's why I laughed. That's why I went and kicked that stone. I'm serious. That's why I cartwheeled home. This should mean something. Yes, it does. Sirius, a poem by James Fenton, from Yellow Tulips, published by Faber & Faber, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Produced by Kathy Roach and Joy Biles, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support comes from listeners like you and from the Juno Artist Gallery, a cooperative featuring the work of over 25 local artists and artisans. The Juno Artist Gallery is open year-round and daily during the summer, located downtown in the Senate Building.
Programming made possible in part by the JCVB Volunteer Program, currently recruiting volunteers for the 2013 summer season to welcome visitors to Juno in one of their 4 visitor centers. Training provided. More information at 523-3732.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon, and my next guest is here, Mandy Johnson. She is one of the event organizers for an event happening at Rockwell on Saturday at 5:30 p.m. It's called Women's Healing Arts Exhibit. What is this event for?
We're just putting it on for Sexual Assault Awareness Month, which is the month of April. And it's just raising public awareness about sexual violence and to educate communities and individuals on how to prevent sexual and domestic violence.
Is there an overall theme for all the pieces that are being submitted?
Yeah, so this year our theme is Reclaim, Renew, and Rejoice. And so we're taking submissions from community members and artists, and they can do poetry or photography or film or drawing or sculpture. We'll take really any kind of media to display.
Are you still accepting submissions for this?
We can take submissions through tomorrow, Friday.
Where can people contact for submission?
They can contact me at Aware at 586-6623, and we'll take them through tomorrow by like 3 p.m.
Okay. And have you gotten a lot of submissions so far?
Yeah, we have a good number of prose and writings and poetry and articles, and we do have some photography and canvas prints and a sculpture.
So how are the prose and poetry, the word pieces, going to be displayed?
So we have them all printed in pretty big print on paper, and then we've backed them. And we'll have a little statement on some of them kind of saying where they're from or what they're about.
Is this going to be a fundraiser event for Aware?
It's not necessarily a fundraiser. It's just more of getting the community kind of together and celebrating women and their kind of healing process.
Okay. And what can people expect to see when they go into the event? What will it look like when they go into Rockwell?
Yeah, so when they walk in, it's going to be in the back room. There'll be some light snacks, and then from 5:30 to 6, people can kind of walk around, mingle, see what's there. And then at 6 o'clock, the program starts, and we'll have some Aware staff speaking about different topics. And then if the artists want to speak about their piece as well, we're giving them some freedom to do that.
Who all will be speaking from Aware, and what are they going to be talking about?
Ati Nasia will be speaking about healing and prevention, and Mandy O'Neill Cole will be giving us some statistics about sexual assault and domestic violence in Alaska. And then I think Sarah Lynn Tabachnik will be talking as well, and Lauren Wosky will be speaking a little bit about effects and impacts of domestic violence and sexual assault as well.
Are there any artists that are committing to speaking about their work too yet?
Right now, I don't know of anyone. I'm sure there's going to be a few people, but I haven't had word from them yet, so I can't say. But I'm sure there are going to be some.
And who all has submitted work so far?
Some of the artists have included Sarah Conroe, Annie Whitty, and Katie Bodie, and there's a couple others that have wanted to remain anonymous.
And why is art being used for this event? Why is art being the being used for a women's healing event?
Because healing is a unique and personal journey to each person, and it looks different to everyone, and that can be expressed through art in many different mediums. So the theme this year, Reclaim, Renew, and Rejoice, really evokes in us a sense of process and taking our power back and our voice back, and then using it to support ourselves and each other. And I think when people kind of see these different pieces of work, they can take it in many different ways for themselves as well.
What kind of snacks are going to be there?
So Rockwell will be catering with light hors d'oeuvres.
Oh, okay. And let's see, are there any other upcoming AWARE events that people should know about?
Aside from this, we do have our Girls in the Run 5K Fun Run on May 11th at 10 a.m. at Twin Lakes. And so that's the spring season, Girls on the Run getting all together and doing their first 5K.
Are there volunteer opportunities for people who want to get involved with stuff like this?
Yeah, so they can contact AWARE at 586-6623, and then we can put them in contact with the right person.
Oh, what kind of volunteer opportunities are available for people who just, the average person just wants to contribute somehow? What kind of opportunities are there?
Let's see, gardening, shopping, cooking, baking, let's see, people who can help answer the phones and, like, admin-type duties. Of course, Girls on the Run volunteers, we could always use either coaches or running buddies for the race. So really anything we're really open to, and we kind of find what fits for that person.
Do you get quite a bit of volunteers? Or?
Yeah, we do. So it's really great to see the community kind of come together in that way with women in need.
That's fantastic. How many pieces have been submitted so far? Are there a lot?
There's quite a few. We have a couple photographs. We have a sculpture. And then we have quite a bit of written poetry and articles taken from different contexts. So it'll definitely be a full room of art.
Well, it's pretty neat that you're just taking all kinds of mediums, no matter what they are. Could you, describe, are there any... film submissions, and how would you present that in a gallery format like that?
I think we are actually having a film about 1 Billion Rising, which was in February. We had a big gathering downtown, and so this year we're going to be showing a film about that, a 5-minute film or so, and so we'll kind of go into 1 Billion Rising, which is women and children and men coming together and kind of really supporting and empowering each other and knowing the effects of violence on women.
1 Billion Rising, was that a film submitted just from a local filmmaker? Or?
No, so Eve Ensler, who's a really well-known feminist and really good with violence against women, she made the video, and it's kind of caught on worldwide, and they have a bunch of... February 14th of this last year was a 1 Billion Rising event, and we had a big get-together of people.
Will that be screened during the actual gallery exhibition part of it?
Yeah, so I think once the program starts at 6, we'll have some of the WARE staff talk, and then we're going to show the video there.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like a great event, and it's open to the public, 5:30 Saturday at Rockwell, totally free of charge, right?
Yep, hope that you can come and... see what everybody's done.
Just for community connectiveness and bringing awareness about assault against women, sexual assault against women, for women's healing art. So thank you very much, Mandy Johnson, for coming in.
Thank you.
Sounds like a great event.
Yep, hope to see you there.
had no idea if my life was gonna change. Oh, you're a miracle to me. Yes, you're everything that I see. But how could I have known before you were mine? Love like I was, baby. Happened only once in a lifetime. Well, you're the one that I dreamed of, who only existed in my imagination.
Listening to Once in a Lifetime by Little Ed and the Blues Imperials. They're going to be performing May 10th at 8 p.m. for Jasmine Classics, so look out for that in May. This Saturday from 1 to 5 at the Rockwell Ballroom downtown, come to shop My Closet. This is an all-ages, free-to-the-public event. Over 20 men and women have cleared out their closets and will be selling their clothing, shoes, and accessories for you to peruse. Grab a cocktail or snack at Rockwell and come downstairs to shop for a while. Enjoy the music, fun atmosphere, and shopping experience. Contact 209-6454 if you have any questions.
Be a part of the music, the moment, the magic. That's Juno Jazz and Classics. Headliners Arlo Guthrie on Friday, May the 3rd, and Booker T. Jones on Saturday, May the 18th, as well as great classical music, jazz, and blues. And don't forget the workshops, master classes, weekday lunchtime concerts, and the annual Community Day on campus. Get more information and tickets at jazzandclassics.org, 463-3378, or at the door for Juno Jazz and Classics. Music, magic, don't miss it.
And I'm here with Nancy DeTrini for Arts Up. So what's happening in the Capitol?
Oh, a couple things.
We've got all kinds of things going on. There's a couple of festivals going on. It's Juno Douglas, all the high school music festival people are here.
Uh-huh.
So that's a lot. You can go and catch those musical groups from all over the Southeast area. Also, the first annual Alaska State Improv Festival is going on. Have you caught any of that yet?
We had some improv guests earlier in the show, and they were very, very entertaining.
they improvised right here.
They're from all over the country, too.
It's very exciting, actually.
It's like a great event.
Really, kudos to Eric and his group for pulling all that off. Let's see, it's this evening at 5:30. There's the third Thursday family time at the Valley Library. Come on down. I don't know, remember what they're doing. Lucid Reverie has artists here, Scott Campbell and Katie Beeson. They are cartoonists, and they're going to be doing a couple of things. They'll be at Goldtown tonight at 6, and then have a few things going on over at the Lucid's place on Front Street. So that should be fun. Let's see. We've got at 7 p.m., the Juno Community Garden Annual Spring Meeting is over at Thunder Mountain Library tonight. The Juno Audubon Society, Peck Rafts and Polar Bears, a trek across the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. That's out at Egan, UAS Egan Building. And there's salsa dancing out at UAS. Tomorrow we go the Capitol. I always love the quilt show. It's very colorful. Have you ever been to that?
I've never been. That
you
sounds lovely.
You should go.
I
it
remember
is
seeing quilts in the KTO studio. I don't know if
they're probably some of the same, but it's all so colorful and fun. That's over at Centennial Hall from noon to 5 on Saturday, on Friday, and then also on Saturday. So you have a couple days to get that. It is the annual Discovery Southeast dinner and auction this Friday night at 6 p.m. That's over at Centennial Hall, and you can get tickets to that in all the usual places, Hearthside Books over at the Jack, et cetera. The music festival things continue. You can go catch those from 6 to 10 p.m. at JDHS. It's $5. There is a gala for the Juno Lyric Opera, but I think it's sold out. You'll have to call them and see. That's up at the Baranoff. Tidal Echoes, their 11th annual. I can't believe it. 11th annual book launch at the UAS Egan Lecture Hall. This is a free event. They're celebrating writers and artists from all over Southeast. And the book price is $5. Go and check that out. It's open mic night at 7:30 out at the university. Saturday is National Astronomy Day. There is, to celebrate that, starting at 8 a.m., a huge garage sale at St. Brendan's to benefit the King Island Christmas group that's going out to sing in Scotland.
Ah.
The City Museum is calling all volunteers. It's an informational meeting from 9 to 10:30 at the City Museum. So if you've thought about volunteering, it's a good time to go there. They're looking for help during the summer. Let's see. 10 o'clock, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on. We have the 49 writers over at the Jack. There is How to Eat Well on a Budget at Rainbow Foods. There's Abel Ryan at the State Museum. The last chance to see the All-Alaska Juried Art Exhibit, actually, over at the State Museum. The quilt show opens. Let's see. At 11, the planetarium folks are doing a whole bunch of stuff because it is National Astronomy Day, starting at 11. There's a demonstration of the Spitz Starball over at the planetarium. There's an open house at noon. There are Earth Day events happening out at Nugget Mall at noon. There's a garage sale, a community garage sale at Rockwell. So you can start out at St. Brendan's and end up at Rockwell's. Let's see, goodness sakes. We have sign-ups for the chess club tournament that's going to happen. You sign up at 2 at the Downtown Public Library. At 4 p.m., Cold Case, Recovering Alaska's Long-Lost Apollo 11 Moon Rock.
That's kidding. That sounds cool.
That's at the Marie Drake Planetarium. Let's see. And they end the evening, I think, at 6 p.m. with the Art of the Aurora art representing and inspired by Northern Lights. So it'll be a nice little art show. There's a tequila tasting at the Viking, in case you want to see lights of a different sort.
Lights and stars.
Yes, let's see. The Symphony has two concerts this weekend at 8 p.m. It is their chamber concert, Beau Soir. That's out at the Shrine of St. Therese. And then in the Sunday afternoon, it is at Holy Trinity. It's going to be beautiful. So you can get the tickets for that in all the usual places. Fine Arts Scholarships on Sunday. Auditions over at the Jack running from 10 in the morning until 4 p.m. We have a bunch of young musicians who will be performing. And this is a public event. It's free, and you're welcome to come and listen to the kids. I think you'll find it very inspirational. The quilt show continues. Let's see. There's Juno Cabaret at 6 p.m. over at Rockwell's on Sunday. Monday's Earth Day. Are we done? Are we out of time?
Well, you could say a few more events.
Okay,
actually,
we got. I need a clock over there. Monday is Earth Day, so there's a whole bunch of things going on over the weekend and through the week about that. At 7 p.m. on Monday, there is a meeting at Northern Light Church, Recidivism, Closing the Revolving Door. It's a public discussion and panel. On Tuesday, the Douglas 4th of July Committee begins planning. Already.
Wow, already.
Actually, they're just in time. And 6 p.m., it is Friends of the Jensen Olsen Arboretum potluck. On Wednesday, it's the first of the pillar. There's a trio of Pillars of America speakers that come, and the first one is this coming Wednesday. There is the Alaska Design Forum is bringing Lateral Office, a very interesting architectural firm. Go online and at least Google it just to see what they do. It's a really interesting sorts of things. And at 7:30 on Wednesday, a percussion and cello duo are performing for free.
Wow.
At Northern Light Church. They are UAF professors, and I think that would be fun.
That's
and by
very,
the
very
way, I want to just mention one thing.
Yes.
We came up with the theme for next year's wearable art.
Really? What is the theme?
This is
a great announcement.
That's right. It's Technicolor.
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 All
yes.
right.
Yes. So get ready. We'll be bringing in a wearable art artist in November, actually, called Shasha Higby. You should Google her, too.
Okay.
And she'll be doing a little inspirational thing and a performance for us here, too. So anyway, I thought I'd let everybody know so you can get started on your Technicolor dream coats or whatever.
That sounds so great. Well, take us through Friday, Nancy, and then...
Thursday, there is Culture Day with Ishmael Hope. Alaska Native Storyteller. That's at the Downtown Library. It's at 6:30 p.m. next Thursday. And at 7 p.m. next Thursday, Lynn Schooler and Mark Kelly will bring you Journeys Along the Lost Coast. It's at the Egan Lecture Hall. It's a $5 donation. It's a fundraiser for the Southeast Alaska Land Trust. And then I'll be in next Thursday, and we can continue the conversation for that.
That sounds fantastic.
That's, once again, another busy...
Another
Exciting
busy week.
Week
for the
it's
arts.
It's going to be good weather, so I don't know how we're going to squeeze it all.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you could go to the Shrine at least and see weather
and beautiful music.
Chamber music.
Yeah. Yes, wonderful.
Well, thank you so much, Nancy,
sure.
And we'll see you next week.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
It's 10th of January. Still ain't had no sleep. She comes waltzing in the nighttime at her wings. She is dressed up like a bandit with 100 sparkling rings. Looking for my company to keep. Coming closer to me, she doesn't say a word. In the shadows of the carved rock tower, where the sounds of the night were the only things we heard. In my darkest hour, she don't wanna hear no secrets. She would guarantee me that.
A little bit of Arlo Guthrie to take us out on the show today. Arlo is going to be performing right here in Juneau. He's going to be in town performing May 3rd at 8 p.m. at Centennial Hall for Juneau Jazz and Classics, so be sure to catch that show. My thanks to all the guests on the show, the Improv Workshop folks, the folks from Aware, and Tidal Echoes and Nancy DeCherney. Stay tuned for the next show, which is tomorrow. On tomorrow's show, I'll be the host again, and we'll talk with Katie Bosler about summer classes at UAS. Irene Morris will be here with the details about this Saturday's Earth Day. We'll learn about tomorrow's National Astronomy Day with guest Steve Casas. Judge Walter Carpinetti and K.J. Metcalf will give us a preview of Monday's panel and community discussion on life after prison. If you miss a Juneau afternoon or want to listen again, you can catch it in other local, statewide, national, and international news at ktoo.org. This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators, in the Valley and Ock Bay area, tune in to K276 AF 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. KRNN can be heard at digital channel 872, and KXLL can be found at 873. We're also online at k2o.org. The weather for today looks like mostly cloudy for the rest of the day. Isolated showers, highs around 47, east wind 10 miles per hour. Friday, partly cloudy, highs around 49, northwest wind 5 miles per hour. And Friday night, mostly cloudy. Stick around for All Things Considered.